We're going to talk about the disorders of the scapulothoracic joint chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book.
Okay, so our mission today is really a deep dive into the anatomy and dysfunction of the scapulothoracic joint. It's often overlooked, but it's so fundamental for the shoulder.
Right. And the first thing I think we have to nail down is the definition. Because the scapulothoracic joint, or ST joint, well, it isn't a true synovial articulation, not like your knee or the main shoulder joint.
So it's not a ball and socket or a hinge?
No, not at all. It's basically just that broad contact area, you know, between the shoulder blade and the back of the rib cage, the thorax. Its only actual skeletal connection runs through the clavicle that connects the sternum across to the acromion.
Which means the scapula is kind of floating there, mainly supported by muscle, right? But it's this crucial pivot point. Exactly. It has this incredible freedom of movement. And it's managed by something like 17 different muscles connecting it to the arm and the torso.
Wow, 17. You've got the rotator cuff muscles connecting to the arm, obviously. And then huge ones like the serratus anterior and the trapezius holding it to the body.
And think about the motions. It moves pretty much every way. Up, down, forward, back. Elevation, depression, protraction, retraction, and rotation too.
So why is this ST motion so critical for the main shoulder joint, the glenohumeral joint?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting for overall function. See, if that scapula isn't stable or moving correctly, the whole arm's foundation is shaky. Mm-hmm. Normally, it sits slightly rotated inward, maybe 30 degrees, and tipped a bit forward. This perfectly positions the glenoid fossa, the socket part of the shoulder.
Okay, so it sets the stage for the arm bone.
Precisely. And here's the kicker. About one-third, like 33%, of the total range of motion when you lift your arm overhead actually comes from the ST joint, not the main ball and socket.
One-third. That's huge. So if that platform isn't working right,
then you get problems. That slight error in positioning or timing, that's often the hidden cause of a lot of common shoulder complaints. When those stabilizing muscles fail or get disorganized, you get what we call scapular dyskinesis. That's just abnormal ST motion.
And that directly messes with the glenohumeral joint mechanics, causing pain.
Yes. It's a major contributor to non-specific shoulder pain. To spot it quickly in clinic, there's the CK scapula mnemonic. It's pretty helpful.
S-C-C-K. Okay, break that down.
Sure. S is for scapular malposition. It's not sitting right.
Yeah.
I is for inferior medial border prominence.
Yeah.
That's the classic winging you can sometimes see.
Right, where the bottom edge sticks out.
Yeah, K is for dyskinesis, the actual abnormal movement pattern itself as the patient moves their arm.
Okay, S-I-K. You skipped C. What's C?
C is coracoid pain or malposition.
Yeah.
And that's actually a really telling sign.
How so?
Well, tenderness over the coracoid process often signals that the patient has been compensating for a while. The biceps tendon, the pec minor. They're working overtime trying to stabilize things because the main scapular muscles aren't doing their job. It points towards a more chronic issue.
That makes sense. Okay, so when examining someone, what are the key things? You mentioned seeing the winging.
Absolutely. And number one, you have to be able to see the entire scapula. An exam done through clothing, that's a huge red flag. You'll miss subtle signs.
Good point. Any specific maneuvers?
The wall push-up is a classic. It really brings out any underlying medial winging.
Yeah.
But one thing to be careful about is scapulothoracic crepitus.
That grinding or popping sound?
Exactly. You'll find it in maybe a third of people who have no shoulder symptoms at all.
Huh?
So just hearing it doesn't mean it's the problem. You absolutely have to correlate it with the patient's actual pain.
Okay. Context is key there.
We have been talking about a chapter from the free and peer-reviewed textbook, Orthopedia, at www.orthopedia.com. Edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book.
All right, let's talk about winging specifically. You mentioned medial winging. How is that different from other types?
So medial scapular winging, where the inner border pulls away from the ribs, that's typically from the serratus anterior muscle not working right. Often it's an injury to its nerve, the long thoracic nerve.
And what pulls it inward then?
Well, the rhomboids and parts of the trapezius are still working, so they pull it medially unopposed. The good news here is that this type often gets better on its own over time. Nerve recovery can happen.
Okay, better prognosis. What about lateral winging?
Lateral scapular winging. It's usually a tougher situation. Here, the trapezius muscle is often the issue, usually due to damage to its nerve, the spinal accessory nerve.
And that can happen during surgery.
Unfortunately, yes. It can be iatrogenic, say during neck dissections or other procedures in that area. With the trap out, the serratus anterior pulls the scapula laterally, sort of outward and downward. The prognosis for recovery here is generally worse.
Got it. So nerve versus nerve, different muscles, different directions, different outcomes. Is there anything else that looks like winging?
Yes, there's pseudo-winging. This isn't actually a nerve or muscle problem per se. It could be something structural, like an osteochondroma, a benign bone growth, just physically pushing the scapula away from the chest wall.
Or just how someone moves.
Right. Or it could be a learned pattern. Someone might adapt their movement to avoid pain somewhere else in the shoulder, and it ends up looking like winging.
So pulling this together for diagnosis, it sounds like scapular dyskinesis isn't usually the first thing you jump to.
Generally, no. It's often considered a diagnosis of exclusion. You look for it when someone has shoulder pain, maybe nonspecific pain, and you've ruled out the more common culprits like, you know, major rotator cuff tears or significant arthritis, and treatments for those haven't worked.
Okay. So if you do diagnose dyskinesis, what's the treatment approach?
The absolute mainstay is physical therapy. Focusing on relative rest initially, then building core strength, improving posture, and specifically retraining those scapular stabilizing muscles.
But does PT always work?
Here's the crucial caveat. PT is likely to fail if the real underlying problem isn't the muscles themselves, but something else affecting the mechanics. Like, say, a poorly healed clavicle fracture or significant AC joint separation. You have to fix the root cause first.
Makes sense. What about that snapping scapula syndrome you mentioned with the crepitus?
Yeah, snapping scapula. Often, non-surgical treatment works well. If there's bursitis associated with it, a cortisone injection can calm things down.
And surgery.
If there's a clear physical mass causing the snapping, like that osteochondroma, removing it usually gives a very good, predictable result. But if it's just snapping without an obvious mass, surgery is much less predictable. The outcomes can be disappointing, and sometimes there's a psychological component involved as well.
Okay. And finally, for the true nerve-related winging.
For the medial winging, given its better prognosis, we often monitor it first, maybe with therapy. For a lateral winging or medial winging that's severe and not improving, then nerve exploration or repair might be considered.
And if those fail?
In really tough, persistent cases, the options become more drastic, like muscle transfers moving other muscles to try and do the job of the paralyzed one, or even, rarely, a scapulothoracic fusion, basically fixing the scapula to the ribcage.
Wow, okay. So quite a range of issues stemming from this often ignored joint. Let's wrap up with the key takeaways. I think there are five main terms listeners should remember from this.
Sound good.
First, the functional nature of the scapulothoracic joint itself, not a true joint, but a crucial interface. Second, scapular dyskinesis and that psychic scapula mnemonic for spotting it. Third, snapping scapula and remembering to look for underlying causes. Fourth, medial scapular winging thinks serratus anterior, long thoracic nerve, often better prognosis. And fifth, lateral scapular winging think trapezius, spinal accessory nerve, generally a tougher problem.
Excellent summary. We have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia, by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayed. It's available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.